So without any doubt, one of the most dramatic psukim in the Torah, and something that I think we touched on last week, that resonates halachically over the generations in terms of the prohibition of consuming the Gid Hanasha, something that resonates in Yaakov's life. It's literally a transformative moment. His very name is changed. So I wanted to restrict our focus to a very narrow canvas. Jane Austen once said, in commenting on her literary work and her approach, that she takes a very, very small area and tries to develop it very deeply. So she said it in a very, nice analogy. She talked about a small piece of ivory. So we'll follow that approach today. I really just want to talk about one pasuk, and to highlight certain dimensions. So the pasuk is known to all of us, Vayivater Yaakov Lamado, that Yaakov was all alone. It's very important. Vayiavek Ish Imo, and there was a man that struggled with him. So rabbinically understood to be some kind of an angel. Ad Alos HaShachar, until morning. So there's relatively few words to analyze here, but so much information is transmitted. Of course, it has to be nighttime, right? They're waging war until the morning, battle. So clearly the time is night, it's dark and it's ominous. That's the setting. Yaakov is alone. Yaakov has nobody that he can turn to for help, at least not in the human sense of the term. And that's important as well. And of course, the middle clause, Vayiavek Ishimo, that there's this struggle. There's this whole discussion as to what the etymology of that word is, Vayiavek. It's not a simple word. So one of the interpretations is avak, which literally means dust, that they were literally rolling in the dirt, engaged in this very intensive and close combat. So close combat by oneself throughout an entire period, it's a significant struggle. And Yaakov emerges from it, as we indicated, a very different person. He emerges from it literally with a new name. He emerges from the situation with a bracha, right? Remember the end of the story. Lo ashalechacha kim berachtani. He will not let this adversary grow until the person has given him a bracha. And we're immediately, of course, struck by Yaakov's insistence on receiving a bracha from this person. It's not usually the end of a quarrel or a fight. You ever saw two people fighting? So it doesn't usually end. Thank God I don't have too much personal experience with this. But with one individual saying to the other, okay, I'm not letting you go until you give me a bracha. Be something inspirational about that. In a broader sense, so much about this incident involving Yaakov is actually just the reverse of that earlier incident in his life where he deceives his father. Remember, his father keeps on asking him his name. Who are you? And Yaakov is the one who keeps on asking, who are you? What is your name? And just as Yaakov had been evasive when his father was asking him, right? Now, this person is very evasive. Lama zeti shalishmi? Why are you asking my name? I can't tell you my name, right? And of course, the role reversal is confirmed and affirmed by the idea that now Yaakov is very much seeking a bracha, but he's seeking a bracha not in deception, but he's seeking a bracha by somebody who snuck up on him, somebody who ambushed him. So we have obviously very direct references back to the early incident, but with some very significant changes as well. Allow me to introduce the perspective of the Rashbam as to what the context is. It's highly ambiguous. I wouldn't even say there's one consensus view in the text, but we know that the general context is Yaakov has been preparing for his encounter with Esav. Yaakov's returning to the land of Israel, so Esav is going to hear about this. Remember, exactly 20 years before that, he had run away from Canaan because Esav was going to kill him, so now he's coming back, so there's all this unfinished business between Yaakov and Esav. So now that Yaakov tries to preempt the situation. He sends malachim. That's the beginning of the parsha. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim aleisav achiv arza seir stei adom. And it appears that there's going to be some kind of a violent confrontation. Esav's traveling with his entire army. It turns out that he had actually been traveling towards Yaakov before the message reached him. Yaakov sends this massive, what they call a mincha, this massive gift to Esav in very highly choreographed way. Yaakov splits his camp. He actually takes them across a river. Vayavor Esav avar yabok. And he again takes everything. So all the preparations have been made. It's clear that the next day he's going to encounter Esav. And the Rashbam says, what exactly was Yaakov doing by himself alone on the other side of the river? So the Rashbam says, interestingly, that he was preparing to run away and take the family and to try to avoid this. He had sent all these messengers. He said, we're going to meet you. And, you know, he sent this whole gift. And he's going to run away. Now, had he done that, let's just think this through, and that would have been the third time. He initially ran away from Esav. He ran away from Lavan. And this would be now the third time that he's avoiding a confrontation. And the Rashbam says, and God didn't allow it to happen, so God sends this Ish, this Malach, whatever, to stop Yaakov and to show Yaakov that he doesn't need to run away anymore. Is the approach to the Rashbam. Very partial to that idea. I want to try to explain why. A seemingly innocuous or unrelated comment by the Gemara here, I think this is probably the most widely known interpretation of why Yaakov was on the other side of the river by himself, was that what did he forget? Forgot these things called these pachim ktanim, right? It's almost Hanukkah, the Pach Shemen. He found these little cruses that he left behind. So, you know, in the broader context here, where he's preparing for this potentially mortal confrontation, so a little strange that he would have gone back to get them, so the Gemara feels the need to explain. And the Gemara says, Milamed, this is supposed to teach us, Shet Tzadikim, when it comes to righteous people, Chaviven Aleim Amonam Kegufam, that they value their money as much as they value their physical safety, Shein poshtim yidayim begezel, because they don't steal. And other people who feel comfortable stealing, you know, big deal that I lost a few things. I could always borrow from somebody else. So, it seems like an innocuous comment to the Gemara, but I actually think it's a very deep observation. So, just to briefly review what we spoke about last week, is that Yaakov shows capacity for an extremely high degree of integrity under very adverse conditions. And his ability to maintain that standard 20 years in the house of Lavan is really remarkable. It earns him the appellation Yaakov HaTzadik from none other than the Rambam. Right? We should all merit being called such a title by the Rambam. And yet, the work is not complete, as we alluded to, because Yaakov is still, when sort of pushed to the wall and dealing with this very difficult person, Yaakov deceives Lavan when he runs away. The Pasuk says very clearly, Vaignov Yaakov is Lev Lavan. I mean, there were consequences to that deception. There were consequences, of course, for Yaakov, because in the process of that deception, Yaakov himself is deceived. The very same Pasuk concludes that Yaakov didn't know that Rachel had stolen the Trafim. And certainly according to the rabbinic interpretation, that deception has terrible consequences for both of them. But it had consequences for Lavan as well. Lavan was not going to be able to see his children and his grandchildren anymore. It wasn't a simple thing to run away. Many people have experienced their children and grandchildren being taken to Israel against their will. He's talking about Lavan. It's a phenomenon. So in any event, it wasn't Yaakov's finest hour. And now Yaakov, according to the Rashbam, is going to do that again. And so you have this Rashbam saying he's going to run. He's not going to be able to stand and have this confrontation. And you have this Gemara which says, why was he crossing the river? It's because he's so fastidious about not stealing. He goes with Pachim Kitanim because it matters to him, because he's And I actually think that both of these things are true. Because up until now, that's exactly where Yaakov is. On the day-in, day-out level, I don't want to say on the micro level, because it would seem like to diminish it, he's extremely and unfailingly honest. But he has these moments where he's, you know, involved in things that are then not consistent with that. And again, under enormous pressure. The pressure from his mother to do that. The pressure of worrying, as he says to Lavan, you know, why was it that I deceived you when I ran away? Because I thought you were going to take my family away from me. You're somebody that's really capable of doing that. He had done something similar in the past. So it seems to me that both the Rashbam and the Gemara can really be true. That Yaakov could at the same time be preparing to deceive Esav yet again by having sent him this whole mincha and saying we're going to meet tomorrow, and then, you know, Esav's going to show up at Yaakov's, you know, somewhere else. And yet the Gemara can also be true that he went back because, you know, in poshtim yedein begezel, he's very, very concerned about honesty and integrity. So it seems to me this is exactly the space that Yaakov finds himself in. Vayivaser Yaakov levado. Yaakov now is all alone. And this struggle that he has throughout that very dark night, to me, is representative and symbolic of Yaakov's confrontation with the past 20 years, specifically with this conflict that he has been struggling with. On the one hand, in Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim, somebody who cultivated a personality of values, of ethics, and of integrity, yet somebody who at critical moments had done things that he wouldn't be proud of. And now, as the Rashbam interpreted, he can no longer, or God doesn't want him to run, to deceive anymore. And he's going to need to stand and to have this confrontation. But for it to be meaningful and for it to be significant and a moment of truly transformative growth, he has to be alone. This cannot be something that somebody's going to do for him. It is my belief that every person has deep issues that they struggle with. Some people are more aware of it than others. Some people are comfortable verbalizing it. Others are aware of it, don't verbalize it. Some people aren't even aware of it, but everybody has fundamental issues of character that they struggle with. And at some point, they have to confront those things by themselves. Nobody can do that for you. It's not incidental, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado. If this is the moment, he's going to have to do it, and he's going to have to do it on his own. His mother can't tell him, Alai kilalas chabini. He can't get Rachel and Leah on his side and say, you know, your father really deserves this because he's been cheating me the whole time. He's got to be by himself for it to be this moment of very powerful growth. I think nobody's more aware of that than Yaakov. Yaakov, who had spent 20 years, in some sense, continuing to run, Ad alos hashachar, when the dawn finally breaks, and he sees that he's withstood this assault, everything he's been afraid of somebody having, whether it's Esav coming after him or Lavan coming after him, and he recognizes that there's strength there that he perhaps didn't even realize himself, this is the time when Yaakov wants a bracha. This is the time when Yaakov feels that he's truly earned the bracha. Now, if you look in Rashi, you look in the Ramban, they come very close to saying this. They say that what Yaakov was looking for was a validation or an affirmation of the bracha that he received from his father. I'm just going half a step further. I'm saying this is actually not just an affirmation or validation, but this to him is the real bracha. This is the one that he didn't earn by deception. On the contrary, he earned the hard way, literally. Vayi'avek ishimo adalos hashachar. It's possible that this reading can be confirmed. When Yaakov finally does encounter Esav, as I pointed out in the past, he no longer refers to the gift that he sent as a mincha, but he changes one very important word. And he says to Esav, Kach na es birchasi, asher huvas lecha. Take the bracha back from me. In other words, I don't think that Yaakov has any desire to hold on to that bracha anymore, the bracha earned by deception. I think he has a much more powerful bracha, the one that he earned, ki sarisa im elokim v'manashim v'atuchal. Moreover, we might suggest this reading could be confirmed by the fact that Yaakov does not emerge unscathed from the confrontation. He's not broken, but he is injured. He's injured in a very particular way. The Torah says, "Vayizrach lo hashemesh," that when the sun rises after this night of confrontation, "Kasher avaris penuel v'hut soleal yirecho," Yaakov's actually limping. What's significant about that is that a limping person, by definition, cannot run. The important point might be, though, that Yaakov doesn't need to run anymore. So a person, you know, who's always looking for the exit, so that would be a very debilitating injury. But for Yaakov, even though it's a wound, arguably one that's healed later in the parasha, the pasuk says, "Vayavo Yaakov shalem ir Shechem." Rashi indicates that he was physically healed. But so he's not unscathed, but the meaning of having this limp now is very different than it would have meant even one night before. And because he doesn't need to run as he had at critical junctures anymore, he recognizes that he can stand and confront difficult people and difficult things, in particular Esav and Lavan. And this ends one very important phase of Yaakov's life, what I would call the Yaakov phase. Literally, the term Yaakov is a reference to the word itself, Akov, means crooked as opposed to straight. Remember Esav himself points that out. Hachi kara shemo Yaakov, vayakveni zef amayim, that he had deceived me twice, both in terms of manipulating me with the bechora, vine atalakach berchasi. It's the end of all of that. His name is Yisrael. He's now able to stand and to fight and to confront things without having to resort to any kinds of manipulations and deceptions. And again, I want to emphasize here that this is where it's very important to be nuanced, because it's not as if Yaakov was categorically a dishonest person. We keep on emphasizing that. He was, generally speaking, an unfailingly honest person, but under immense pressure, he would crack in this way. And this is the moment where he leaves that behind. I mean, Yaakov actually did get that name. I mean, Esav puts it in a particularly pejorative sense. But remember, Yaakov actually did get that name from something that is an image of person doing something unfair. Somebody's getting out first, and you're grabbing onto their leg. I mean, that is actually why his parents called him that. Yado ochezes ba'akev Esav. Esav is getting out first, and he's holding on to him, and in a way that's unfair. So this is really interesting reversal now, where Yaakov began his life when he was called Yaakov by grabbing onto somebody's leg. And here, of course, Yaakov is able to emerge. He no longer carries that stigma when somebody else grabs his leg, right, and wounds him. But in a certain sense, he emerges much more whole for all of that. This ends a phase of Yaakov's life. From this point on, Yaakov has dealt with the ghosts of his past, Esav and Lavan, and it could have ended here. And then he could go on and ride off into the sunset, or the sunrise, as the case may be. But we know that the entire second half of Sefer Bereishis is all of the other challenges that Yaakov would face. There really is something incredibly circular about he was able to overcome after 20 years, and it didn't happen overnight, but in this night, he's able to really put those ghosts behind him. And that would be a very natural ending to this story, how he came back to Canaan, and he was able to somehow emerge whole from this experience. And the pasuk says, yeah, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. And in that pasuk, you have the sense of completion with respect to everything that's gone on since Parshas Toldos, so Toldos Vayetze, the beginning of Ishach. But in that very clause, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem, so now we have the beginning of the rest of the troubles, Shechem, Dina, Shimon and Levi, and everything that's going to transpire from there. So Yaakov's story now really transitions to be a story, to be a story about his own personal challenges and the ghosts that he really has overcome, to all the challenges now that will emerge from his role as Yisrael, not so much Yaakov, but Yisrael, that is to say, the father of the tribes of Israel. And all of the troubles that are going to emerge from this point on, whether it's related to Dinah, whether it's related to Reuven and Bilhan, of course, most prominently as it relates to the sale of Yosef, are all problems that now emerge from the generation below. Okay, so Yaakov, this important moment, there's not long, the Esav trouble, you know, is gone, the Laban troubles, but now all of it is going to rise back up from the generation below, and well that's
deception.
That's exactly that. So the legacy is of the deception is very profound. The word mirma comes up so many different times, and again, the deception. Shimon and Levi are described in this week's parsha as acting b'mirma, and when it comes to the what they did to the people of Shechem, it's a massive debate about whether there was any validity to that or not between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam is more supportive than the Ramban is, but it clearly sees that Yaakov is horrified by the deception in which they engage, and not so much against Shechem and Hamor as two individuals, but you know, the people living in the city, you know, their guilt is you know, is at least questionable. The Ramban very, very, very perturbed by that. And you know, then it will continue on and come to its climax with the deceptions of what they did to their father in the context of selling Yosef. So Yaakov may have overcome this piece, the deception piece, in terms of his own personal story, but the trouble is that these things have a legacy to them, that's going to be the rest of the story of Sefer Bereishis, is how these things continue to reemerge for Yaakov and creates challenges that are not so much of his own making, but now specifically relate to the generation. So again, Vayishlach is very much a transitional parsha in that way. Between Yaakov and his story up in life up until that point, in particular as it relates to Esav and Lavan, and all of the challenges that are going to emerge from his role as Israel, his role as the father of a family, and eventually the father of the Jewish people. And that's the dividing point in the parsha when you get to Dina and Shimon and Levi, and the rest of Sefer Bereishis basically flows and follows directly from there.